Hello, everyone. Welcome, welcome, welcome back to season two of Golden Hour. You can hear the smile on my face probably because I'm reflecting back on season one and what started out as this idea that I had over the pandemic and calling up my friend Darren and being like, hey, would you be willing to let me interview you for this thing? And then seeing it bloom into a full-fledged podcast with a community that I've been so excited to see grow more and more. To connect with all of you and to hear your stories about how you see yourselves reflected in these artists is more than I ever could have asked for. So thank you so much for coming back. My friends, this season is stacked. If this first episode is any indication, it's gonna be, in the words of my favorite sad boy, Kendall Roy, all bangers, no skips. Up on the bamboo ceiling, we're just getting started. Okay. Buckle up, because our season two premiere guest is none other than Apple Dee App of the Grammy-winning, multi-platinum record-selling group, the Black Eyed Peas. I'm a beast when you turn me on, into the future Cybertron, harder, faster, better, stronger, texting ladies extra longer, cause we got to beat that bounce, we got to beat that pound, we got to beat that 808, that boom boom in your town. I had such a great time talking to Apple, whose given name is Alan Pineda. Apple has had a wild and storied life, which includes his experience growing up poor in the Philippines and navigating an eye condition that classified him as legally blind, his experience working as a telemarketer and popping popcorn at his local AMC as a teenager, and eventually linking up with will.i.am in the eighth grade and forming the Black Eyed Peas. So without further ado, let's get into it. So nice to meet you. We're so grateful that you took the time to do this. The Black Eyed Peas has been such a part of our consciousness growing up, and this is just a dream to get to talk to you.
Oh, wow. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You've known will.i.am since eighth grade, right? Yeah. It's a lifetime.
Yeah. I was sponsored as a kid from the Philippines. You know, those programs, send 75 cents to a kid. In a third world country, and my mom signed me up in those program, and I was able to go to the U.S. in 89. So I've met Will in 89 since we were 14 years old. Before I was enrolled in school, you know, they wanted to introduce me to kids to play with, and my adopted father had a best friend, which is will.i.am's uncle. And then they introduced us, and they took me to East LA. You know, we started conversing like, hey, you know, you're from the Philippines. I'd never heard of that place. Like, where is that? What do you do there? I barely spoke English then. You know, I wasn't that fluent yet. And I had a really thick accent. And it's like, you know, I go farming. I take care of water buffaloes, and I go to school, and I like to break dance. And he's like, what? You like to break dance? It's like, show me some moves. So I got to, you know, I had to show a couple of moves. I had to do the running man and so a couple of break dance moves. Yeah. And then the rest is history. You know, we clicked after that and started hanging out every weekend. And we started a dance crew. And then I started meeting other Asian kids and Filipinos. So they started inviting me to like Filipino parties and Asian parties. Mm-hmm. And that's where we got started. We started the dance crew. That's where we would perform at house parties, battle other B-boys. You know, back uh-huh. then, to be in hip hop, you gotta, you know, do all the elements. You know, you try to cover all the elements. Right, right. So breaking was one of them. I grew up in a province in the Philippines. And then once I got to the city, I started seeing breakdancing. That's how I got introduced to it. So before I left Philippines, that's what I knew. And then when I met Will, we just kind of clicked after that. And he dances too. So that's the first thing we formed. And then one day he's like, yo, you should rap with me. I'm like, what? I'm like, bro, I can barely speak English, man. And now you want me to rap? He's like, no, you got this. You got rhythm, you know, you got timing, and just practice. And we would just put on some beats in my bedroom, and then we'd try to practice. And he's like, just say anything that's on top of your head and make it rhyme. I'm like, oh yeah, that's really easy. And the first thing that came in my head, literally, it's funny. It's the beat came on and was like, abakada ega aila mananang o para sa tauaya. He's like, yo, see, I knew it. You got it, man. You got it. It's like, what did you say? I'm like, oh, the ABCs in Tagalog.
I heard an avocado in there.
Avocado, yeah. Avocado.
I love that. It because your roots are in breakdancing and in hip hop, and the early Black Eyed Peas records are reminiscent of the beginning of hip hop. I find that they're very Tribe Called Quest. You were signed to Eazy-E's label when you first came up. And one thing that I love about those early hip hop records is how they kind of evoke nursery rhymes in their sing-alongness. You know, it's like one, two, three, and the foe. You know, it's very, anybody can sing along to it and grab onto it, and it becomes so universal that way. And I really feel that way about the Black Eyed Peas work extending into the early 2000s and beyond. And so you're freestyling the Filipino alphabet makes me see how that translates throughout your creativity and through your songwriting process. It's such a wonderful way of like, I don't know how to do this, but I'm going to just do what I know.
Yeah, do what I know. Yeah, just the top of the head, you know, and that's what came out. And that actually like, oh, I could keep time. And that really like inspired me. And then I started writing after that. So like you said, we were influenced by Tribe Called Quest and De La Soul. And that's how I actually learned English, by listening to Tribe Called Quest, because Q-Tip, he wrote in like sentences, almost perfect grammar, you know, but with a little twist of like, you know, cool slangs in there. And that's how I'm like, and it was very clear. So that was our influence. So when we started writing, he's like, I want to say something that the crowd could say, you know, along with me. And especially like at clubs too, you know, if people are just partying, you know, too many words is like, that's too complicated. You know, I just want to say,
exactly.
when I'm getting lit, I just want to say something easy that I can say, sing with, you know?
Absolutely.
And then we have songs like Where's the Love, where we, you know, we really focus on like what's going on in our society and in our lives, you know?
I feel the weight of the world on my shoulder. As I'm getting older, your people get colder. Most of us only care about money making. Selfishness got us following the wrong direction. Wrong information always shown by the media. Negative images is the main criteria. Infecting the young minds faster than bacteria. Kids wanna act like what they
say. I love that song. That was my first introduction to y'all as a group. I was in high school. It was shortly after September 11th had happened. And I remember it giving me so much comfort in that time, the way the lyrics and the strings in it and the sentiment behind the song does feel like a perfect milestone of that moment in history. I actually just rewatched the music video of you guys like in the van transmitting the message all over the world. It's really powerful.
Yeah, that was like really dark times in America, you know, and we were due to go to on tour. And we were like scared if we should go or not, you know. Will was talking to his grandmother and kind of asked her like, all these things going on, should we still go out there? It's like, yeah, Willie, actually this is the perfect time to provide this escape for people and spread the love. So you guys should go out there and do what you do. And then at the end of that tour, that's when Where's the Love came. That's when we wrote Where's the Love came about. That whole mission, and then that was the gift or the painting of that moment.
Ooh, I love how you put that. I really love the idea of songs as paintings of moments, capturing hardship and like transmutating it into something that you can take as a souvenir that makes it somewhat worth it to have experienced that. I'd love to hear about the writing of Where Is the Love, how that came about. Were you in the studio? Was it something that you guys were talking about while on tour?
Actually, we were on hiatus at that time. We just finished our second record and Napster came about at that time and our album got leaked on Napster. So our numbers weren't the same, you know, the record sales. That's actually the first like streaming downloading kind of thing. We were doing a college tour. And we, you know, sometimes we'd hang out with like college students, party. And then we were at a dorm and then they start playing our album and it wasn't released yet. We're like, holy shit, how the fuck did you get this? It's like, yo, app, did you burn this fucking album and didn't tell me? Now it's out there. I'm like, yo, I didn't do nothing, man. And then they told us, it's like, yeah, we got it from this website called Napster. And then, so they got downloaded and our record sales were kind of low. And then, you know, there was kind of like, we didn't know if we were going to get dropped from Interscope and we were in hiatus. And then we were all going through our personal, like, dark times in our lives, you know. And one day we just like, yo, let's just go back to the studio and do what we do. That's home for us. Whatever we're going through, we're in there and let's just create. And then when we went back to the studio, that's the first song we wrote is Where's the Love. We didn't know it was going to be a hit, you know, but it just felt good as a song.
And what was the experience like when once it started climbing the charts and it became this huge hit?
I mean, it just felt great for a song to be that popular with a message. You know, that's what felt good. It's like I could listen to Where's the Love anytime. You know, like we have a lot of songs, but Where's the Love is like something that I could listen to and perform all the time. And it feels like a new song. It's great that it created awareness on what's going on in the world. And it was a pop song that with a meaning. So that felt good.
Yeah. Did you notice a big shift in your audience after that song started to do really well?
Yeah. Before it was like, you know, just the cool kids and, you know, our age range at that time. But Where's the Love? We got from parents to the teenagers to the kids at the show, you know?
It's always a big accomplishment.
You know, sometimes you're like, you know, you think it's a big crowd. You're like, you know, you say some, yo, get your fucking hands. Oh, shit, there's kids out there. It's like, yo. And so we got the whole different range of supporters and listeners.
Yeah. I think Where Is the Love is really interesting because it sort of bridges this gap in between your earlier records, which were much more like underground sounding and had a definite focus on social justice and like political commentary, which Where Is the Love definitely does, but it's also a pop song. And from Where Is the Love, the albums that follow, the music got much more pop and dance oriented. And then it really opened the door to you being one of the biggest groups of the 2000s. And I'm curious if there was a conscious shift in the approach of how the music was made now that you were a bigger band. Was it distinctly aimed towards pop or was it something that you all gravitated towards listening to more world music?
Yeah, so when we started touring outside of the US and we started going around the world, we would just pick up like different music genres, whatever's going on at that time. We'd go to like raves and we were really influenced by like electro music. We're like, yo, what is this? This is like, feels like some underground like hip hop, but like faster, but really hard. And we're like, I want to rap on top of that. Mm-hmm. So we were just influenced by like the hard beats of electro. And then we like try to like break the code on how to rap on a faster beat because you got to write different cadences and stuff. And so we're so like hyped about it that that's all we would make during that time in making the album.
Yeah.
it's like, yeah, you know, it's just, that's like the vibe right now. So we're just trying to keep breaking the code. And we're always trying to like find music genres and how to present it to the whole world and make the world understand it. You know what I mean? We always pick up like whatever's bubbling and then we put our stamp on it. And then it's like, how can this be like on radio? How can this be like a universal world song? That's where we're always trying to figure out. And then we got influenced by reggaeton, you know?
And then
we're like, oh, this is like so festive. You could dance to it and you could write, you know, some nice melodies on top of it.
That's so cool. I really see the world music influence in all of your hits. Like I was listening to Boom Boom Pow and I was like, this trumpet line almost has like klezmer vibes. And as you said, Hey Mama is like very reggaeton.
Don't Funk With My Heart is a Bollywood sample, you know?
Yeah.
We went to India and we're like, yo, this is dope. What is this? We should sample this, you know?
Yeah, that voracious collage-y music appetite, I think, is what makes you guys so distinct. And it is really, I think it does distinguish you from so many groups at the time because you're not used to hearing rap over dance beats like that. You're not used to hearing hip hop over electro or dubstep. And I think that was so forward thinking at the time.
It was fun. It was fun for us. It was like something to tackle and like figure out. So that's what makes it more like we're having fun in the studio, jumping around like, yo, how would you rap on this? You know, that's a dope rhythm right there. Like, you know.
What is your approach when you come, when you're given the beat or when you make a beat, or are you all together in the same room? Do you go off into separate rooms and write different parts? How does it all come together?
We have separate rooms and then we just kind of make create for a period of time. And then we come together in one room and start showing different ideas. And then we pick like what's cool. And then we all work on that together. Sometimes I'll just write a verse and then I just show Will and then it's like, oh, that's dope. Let me make a beat on top of that. Or sometimes like, you know, my producer will have beats. Then we'll just do some mumbles on top of it. And then you transcribe after.
Will is such a forward-thinking entrepreneurial businessman in addition to an artist. How would you describe your relationship with him, your friendship with him, your creative relationship with him, and how has that evolved over the years?
Will is like a soulmate. We're like soulmates, like brothers. I remember after the excitement of being sponsored and, you know, being in the U.S., homesickness started like settling in, you know? And, you know, back then I'd cry because I thought America was like Disneyland every day, but reality sets in is like, oh, you know, this is life. And, you know, I'd cry to Will and like, yo, you know, I miss my family. You know, I want to go home now. And he's like, oh, don't worry about it, bro. We're going to make it one day. And we're going to go back to Philippines and perform in front of your family. It's like, oh yeah. Yeah, that's cool. That's, you know, so that's, you've always had that, like, that goal. And you know, I come from a ghetto and he's from the ghetto in the U.S. in East L.A. And our dream was always to help out our family to have a better life. So we always like, we have that pact like, yo, we're going to make it. We're not taking no for an answer. And yeah, man, my brother's, he never stopped thinking, genius, like, always on, you know, like, man, are you a robot or something, you know? He just keeps going. And that's very inspiring. And that's what keeps me going. That's what inspires me to keep moving and like do a bunch of things, you know?
Yeah, he truly does not stop. Tell me about your relationship with Taboo.
Taboo is like our warrior. Like Taboo is like a warrior on stage. Like he's like your motivator. He's very energetic, always on a positive mode. if me and Will are kind of like low energy on stage, Taboo always picks you up. You know, mm-hmm. it always like gives you that energy, like a shove on the shoulder, or just like he goes out there and like interact with the crowd serve. We try to keep up with him. Like, oh no, Tab's energetic today. Shit, I gotta beat that energy, you know?
After you moved to the States, how did you stay in touch with your parents and what did they think about what you were doing?
Oh yeah, like when I first got to the US, I was writing letters every other day. Part of my allowance, you know, I would send it home. That's one way I kept in touch with my family. And back then, my mom had to travel like a few hours to get to a telephone. And then so she'd call me like 3 a.m. because it's like the time difference in the US and Philippines. And, you know, I go home now, you know, annually, spend my holidays with my family. My family's really proud and stuff. But my dad, when I got to the US, we invited him to one of our first shows. You know, we had a lot of curse words in our raps back then. And then the production sucks. Our mic were feedbacking and blah, blah, blah. And then when I got back home, my dad sat me down, you know. It's like, son, I'd like to talk to you. Apparently you like to rap with Will I Am, but I brought you to the US to have an education. But you want to rap with Will. So if you'd like to stay under my roof, you got to go to college. If you want to rap with Will, you got to get a job. So I was mixing nacho cheese at a AFC theater in a concession stand. He didn't approve at first. And then a few years later, we started doing shows. And then I started inviting my dad. And he was like always in the front now. I took him to the Grammys.
Oh.
And then he's like, I think he's proud, you know?
Oh.
But he was pretty worried at first. Like, imagine like bringing a kid, sponsoring a kid to get an education. Now he wants to do music. That must have been like, oh my God, what did I do? But we did all right. And he was always, once we started gaining crowds, he's always there. He's good. He was smiling.
And he's a good dad for being like, you know, you got to get a job. You got to support yourself if this is really what you want to do.
That made me really, really think that is this really what I want to do? That I got to get a job? So it's what I wanted to do.
Working at AMC.
Yeah.
Popping that popcorn.
Yeah, I had them long nacho gloves, steering nacho cheese. And I did telemarketing. When we would go to like Asian parties, everyone had like drop Honda Civics with the body kit. And that was always like our dream. We're like, yo, one day I'm going to give you like a Honda Civic, man, with the fine Asian girl with the long black hair, you know? So we got a telemarketing job, but to get scooters so we could go to these parties. We wanted to get Vespas. We're like, well, we can't afford a Honda Civic, but we can afford Vespas. And Will started calling his girlfriend at a time. It was long distance. So they started seeing the phone bills. They're like, this is not the city we wanted you to call. So they started getting phone bills and they hired us together. They fired us together.
That's an amazing origin story. From telemarketers to being two of the most successful pop stars on the planet. Look who's laughing now.
I still remember that spiel too. It's good evening, ma'am. My name is Alan Pineda from the California Activities League, and I would like to ask you a few questions, if I may. No, we're having dinner right now. Hi, my name is Alan Pineda from...
What were you selling?
We were selling like these package to like for out after school program for kids. You know, mm-hmm. that expression, like, do you think that kids have other alternatives than getting into gangs and drugs? Well, of course, you know, you get an old lady and she want to talk, you know, like, yes, of course. And then that's where you usually get the donations from old ladies.
Yeah. Yeah. You prey on their compassion. I would love to ask about your heritage and your relationship with your roots. It seems like you have such a strong connection to your Filipino heritage, coming from there, wanting to do your family proud and come back in a way where you're on tour. That was so touching when you're mentioning that about the conversation you had with Will.i.am when you were homesick. How do you think about that as you navigate through the world as an artist, and how has that informed your creative process?
I never want to forget where I come from. That's very important for me, my humble beginning. So even like when I built a house in the Philippines, I built it, you know, I brought my whole team, my bandmates, my hometown. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're expecting like this like big mansion in the city, you know. But I wanted to build the house where I grew up and where I came from. So I rebuilt my grandparents' old house. And that's where I built my big house. I never wanted to forget where I come from. And I think that's what motivates me and remind me when I'm out in the world. And like giving back is really, really important for me, because I was a kid that was given an opportunity, brought to the U.S., became a Black Eyed Peas. So, you know, I like to pay it forward and give that same opportunity to kids like me in the Philippines, you know, from building schools to scholarships to teaching creatives, entrepreneurship. And, you know, I think all of that makeup is what makes me who I am when I'm mm-hmm. on stage and really proud of where I came from.
That's so cool to hear. And you also have a foundation in the Philippines.
Yeah. It's called the apple of my eye. And, you know, very simple. I had a hard time going through school, you know, getting an education because of my low vision. You know, I just wanted to provide that help, that aid for other kids just like me. So we've been delivering these red cams throughout Philippines to prevent blindness. Especially for premature babies, you only have like 48 hours to cure and diagnose the problem. And I had a low vision, but imagine being blind in a third world country. It's already hard enough growing up there, but imagine being blind. So that's why it's really the apple of my eye is very dear to my heart.
I also read that you had a surgery in 2012 that enabled your vision to be corrected in a huge way.
Yeah, I did. You know, I used to wear contacts, and there's this new procedure where they actually insert the lens in your retina. And so that, you know, with nystagmus, the movement, you know, your eye always moves. So with this procedure, the lens follows the movement of the retina. So it improved my vision about, you know, 5 to 7%. And mm-hmm. I don't have to wear contacts anymore. One day on tour, I was next to like Fergie, and she did like a hand movement, and she didn't know I was next to her, and she hit my eye and ripped my contact. Ooh. And I couldn't get I was blind, half blind for like a half a tour. Because I couldn't get contacts from the U.S. with my grade and stuff. So that's one of the, you know, alleviate one of the problems with this procedure.
I feel on a smaller level, I wore contacts for my entire life. I got LASIK a couple years ago, and I only wish that I'd gotten it sooner, because as a touring musician, you must know the struggle of trying to put in your contacts on the bus.
Oh, yeah.
Or in a green room or something. With dirty hands, you're like setting up and all this stuff.
Oh, my God. I swear, when I was wearing contacts, I'm like, I'm going to go blind one day. I was so bad at it. Like, You know, I'd like literally use water one day. I'm like,
do you like being on the road?
Yeah, I love it. I love it. You know, I love the process of creating the music in a studio, but to see it like with the crowd and yes. see it live. And it gives me like schedule. I'm not very good at schedule. When I'm at mm-hmm. home, I'm like all over the place. But on tour, I'm just like this, you know? Yep. Wake yep. up, work out, interviews, yeah. the venue, perform, travel, you know?
Any other tour stories that jump out at you?
Okay, one of memorable show. We got to go back to the Philippines and perform in front of my family. And we were walking towards the stage. And then me and Will looked at each other. It's like, yo, remember that one night you were crying about going back home? And now here it is. And we were all like teary-eyed together and stuff. So
where does the peas go from here? Is there anything else that you want to check off on your bucket list?
Oh, yeah. So, you know, we started a label with Epic. It's called Los Feliz.
Cool.
That's where I grew up in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And we signed a new artist that I discovered from the Philippines on The Voice. Her name is Jay Ray Soul.
Nice.
Now we finished her album and she's been singing with us on tour, on stage. We got a new album, a Black Eyed Peas new album with a lot of great features on there. So we're very, very excited. We just shot the video in Barcelona a few weeks ago. New album and then the tour.
Apple, this has been an absolute joy to talk with you and laugh with you and hear about your incredible life and career. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. And it was cool. I had a great time.
Thank you again to Apple D App for joining us on the show today. You can find him on Instagram at Apple D App. Golden Hour is created by me and produced and edited by Dave Yim. Gabriel Hunter Chang is our production associate. You can follow us on Instagram at Golden Hour Pod. Send us any thoughts on any of these episodes by emailing us at goldenhourwithk@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks so much again for listening. See you next time.